We made this.
Welcome everyone to Pick a Disc. I'm your host Matt Latham. This is the show where people pick an album to talk about for whatever reason they bloody well want to. Today's guest is Tracy B from the We Dig Music podcast, which is fun because it's not a We Dig Music podcast host. That's not Colin. A joke that I've probably made in about six different places now. And she's going to be talking about the Skid Mountain Boys and Massachusetts. And we have a lot of fun talking about that. We talk about the singer-songwriter in general. And we delve into some interesting tangents with a story that I've found a weakest link to justify telling it, because I've been dying to tell it since I started the podcast. So, and before we begin, this is the time where I say, you know, follow us on all the socials, follow us on all the places that we can be followed, like, you know, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, the Facebook group, they're all under Pick a Disc, no matter where you look. And yeah, leave us a review on whatever you want to leave a review on. And before we go on to the chat with Tracy, I just want to say thank you for people for listening and for constant listening. I've got people who are listening to more than one episode because someone they like is a guest, and people are actually following and listening to lots of them at once, and it's blowing my mind. We recently cracked 3,000 downloads, and not all of them was the Limp Bizkit episode. Some of them was the Linkin Park episode, so it's probably Chris's fault. But if you've been listening, if you said anything good, if you said you've enjoyed it to me, I mean from the bottom of my heart, absolutely thank you. And it keeps me going. It keeps knowing people are actually listening and somehow haven't been driven insane by my mumbling and all that kind of stuff. I'm just grateful for people for continuing to listen. And like the past 2 weeks or so, there's just been an upsurge of listeners, and I can't say thank you enough. And To stop myself from saying thank you again, I think it's time that we speak to Tracy. We begin this latest edition with the first in what will be a very, I think, 6 week span of the We Dig Music trilogy. So I have Tracy B from We Dig Music in front of me.
Hello.
Hello. And before we begin, I wanted to quote your Twitter bio.
Yeah.
Okay. And a game I like to play called, oh, sorry, I thought these were programming languages. I did at first because I saw the RHP bit and I thought, oh, because I misread it as PHP at first.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and suddenly I'll quite
verbatim. Database language.
I'll quite verbatim. Hopeless romantic, rubbish musician, sulky software developer, one third of the We Dig Music PCAST team, TFC, MBV, AMC, TWP, SMB, UVS, YLT, RHP, JTP, DAD, not SFM, which it took me to realise that because of listening to We Dig Music, that they're actually abbreviations of bands.
They are, they're all
And I've
bands.
Tried to guess them, and a few of them, a lot of them I couldn't, so I've just made up ones which I thought there might be.
Excellent.
So these are fictional band names. Well, some of them are actual guesses.
Okay.
So TFC, I thought that was frigging Coldplay. But which one?
That's Teenage Fan Club.
Oh, okay. And I've not actually listened to them that much. Actually.
Okay.
No.
My Twitter handle's actually one of their song names.
MBV, I then realised what they might have been afterwards, but I have Mr. Blobby's Violin.
Right.
But I'm assuming that's
an avant-garde project he did later on.
Yeah, that's his, well, too far, I did watch a video where he did a cover of Wonderwall, so.
God, terrible.
Yeah, yeah. And for some reason, that's the second time I brought that in conversation this past week, and I can't remember the first time.
You're obsessed.
Yeah, must be. But it's My Bloody Valentine, isn't it?
It is.
Yes. Again, another band that I'm not familiar with, but they seem to be referenced to a few bands that I like, because they're quite shoegazy.
Very.
Very, yeah. AMC. Some of these I tried to Google and see if they're them, but it came up with something called the Army Material Command Band, which is an actual marching band which performs.
Okay, they're nothing like a marching band, no.
No.
One's an American Music Club.
Oh, okay.
Who I will be referencing as we talk about this album.
Oh, okay.
Probably.
Okay. TWP was basically from We Dig Music, because you mentioned The Wedding Present.
Yes.
The whole, pretty much, it's like name drops once an episode.
Pretty much.
I did actually watch half a headline set of indie tracks of them.
Okay.
Because there was performance. I think
what
it
year?
Was. Oh, I'm sure it was. When was George Best out? George Best out. I'm sure part of it was like 30th anniversary of that album.
Yeah, 91? No. Don't put me on the spot. I don't remember years.
Okay.
It's too long ago.
I think it was an anniversary, I think, of that. So it might have been.
Yeah,
it might. Or at least. I can't remember what it was, but I think I do remember watching to about half of that, but that's less.
Because they did the last anniversary George Best shows, 3 years ago now?
It might have been then.
And they're not going to play it live again now.
Yeah. Oh, okay. SMB, we'll get back to that one.
We will.
UVS, this isn't just randomly Ukrainian Volcanic Soccer, which I think will actually be a very good band name.
It would add link into the wedding present, actually, with the Ukrainians, maybe.
Oh, okay.
But that one's actually Ultra Vivid Scene.
Okay.
Late 80s, early 90s, okay. American, pretty much one-man band.
Okay, that's completely new to me. I've not heard them before. YLT... Yala Tango,
that we did on the podcast.
Yeah,
we did music once.
Okay, which a band that I've never listened to, but again, seem to be linked to kind of more modern bands that I listen to.
Loads of bands will cite them as an influence, but they're so vast. Their back catalogue is huge, and they've got quite a few different styles, so they're an odd one to get into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. RHP, I think I know what these are, but I put Rap Hands Party. But I think they're Red House Painters.
Red House Painters, yeah.
Again, and I just know the name. I know nothing else about them. But I just know the name because of the...
The early Red House Painters stuff. I mean, this is Mark Kozelek, who you might know from his later Sun Kill Moon project.
Oh, yes.
The early Red House Painters is just beautiful, melancholy, slowcore music.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's basically the beginnings of slowcore.
Okay. JTP, Jacksonville Tea Party.
It's actually Josh T. Pearson.
Oh, okay. That name rings a bell, but I'm not sure.
He was in a band called Live to Experience, and they had an iconic album, the Texas Jerusalem Crossroads. He's kind of quite country. He had an album 2-3 years ago now.
D.A.D. or Dad? No, I'll just put Dungeons and Dragons. And...
It's actually a dodgy goth rock band from the late 80s, Dawn After Dark, who were the first band I started following in the late 80s.
Oh, okay.
Recently reformed, so reformed after 30 years. So added them to my bio because I went back and met up with a load of the original following. And it was just great to see people again. And they're going to do another... They're doing the first London gig in 30 years later this year, so...
Oh, OK. And not SFM, which... I just put San Fernando Mechanics.
SFM is my affectionate name for Simple Minds.
Oh, OK.
And it's just a bit of an ongoing joke with me on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
And not enjoying Simple Minds always.
So you don't like them when you do them?
No, not much.
Okay. So the one that we skipped, the SMB, is
Scud Mountain Boys.
Yep, and the album you've picked?
The album I've picked is their 1996 album, Massachusetts.
Yep, and which I believe came out in 1996 in April.
On Sub Pop Records.
Yeah, a label that's appeared a couple of times now on this on this podcast.
I mean, this was they didn't start out on Sub Pop. Their two albums prior to this weren't Sub Pop, but I think this, because they were on Sub Pop, they brought them more to the attention of, you know, the kind of kids that were following anything that Sub Pop would have released at that time.
Yeah, it's Scud Mountain Boys there. Wikipedia lists them as an alternative country band.
Yeah, you very much would describe them as alt country. I mean, this album, get your bingo cards ready, kids. It is just the most perfect slice of alt country heartbreak.
Okay.
It's a collection of just dark, bitter tales about fucked up relationships Some of them possibly about the same person. I don't know the history of these songs, but there's everything in there. There's love, there's hate, there's regret, there's revenge, bitterness, drunkenness. It's the whole of humanity wrapped up in alt country and steel pedal guitar.
Okay.
I just adore it. They're kind of...
So why this album in particular? So why have you picked this album in particular?
So it's from 96, but I actually didn't hear it until 2017.
Okay.
Someone I know on Twitter, David Bruce, posted a picture of the CD with the caption, "Now playing the greatest album you've never heard." Mm-hmm. And I hadn't heard it. So I played it, and he was so right. Over the weeks after that tweet, I got so addicted to it, and I played it exclusively over and over and over, and I just couldn't stop listening to it. Just Joe Panisse's voice, the gorgeous steel pedal guitar, the lyrics are so good. The album made me cry. I love a sad song to make me cry. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strange, though, that I hadn't heard it and that I didn't really know who the Scud Mountain Boys were, because I already knew who Joe Panisse was, because I'd been into his later band, the Panisse Brothers, for well over a decade.
So
I'd never gone back and listened to his earlier stuff. So it was strange to have got into it completely backwards.
Answers a couple of questions. A couple of next questions of how did you find them out, and how did you?
Yeah,
yeah. But you'd learned Japanese beforehand.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you discover him?
I think so. The Panisse Brothers. I mean, because Scud Mountain Boys, they're a band from Massachusetts. In fact, started early 90s, and then the Panisse Brothers, their first album was in 98. And I do have that album, but I don't think I would have heard it until maybe mid-2000s. A friend introduced me to the Panisse Brothers, sort of early to mid-2000s.
Okay.
So it's strange that I hadn't gone back. Especially when I found out that on the first two albums of the Scud Mountain Boys, they cover a couple of Glen Campbell tracks that I love. They do a cover of Wichita Line Man on one of them, and they do a cover of Where's the Playground Susie on another, you know, the classic Jimmy Webb songs. And so I've always found it strange that I hadn't got into them earlier.
Oh, okay. So was you aware of the Scud Mountain Boys while she was in, or was he just like, oh, no, I didn't realise it had...
No, not at all. It's only really recently, in the last sort of 10 years, that everyone's obsessed with, you know, like, you wiki a band and you know their entire back catalogue in like the click of a finger. Mm. You know, it never used to be like this.
I think it's the, particularly with the age of streaming, age of streaming and music streaming, a lot of stuff is now more accessible.
Yeah.
So you can probably go back and...
Band recommendations used to be, you know, just word of mouth and what you just came across in the record shop or something, or what a mate had listened to and lent you, and, you know, you'd borrow stuff off a friend or something. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know who Scud Mountain Boys were at the time.
Okay, I'll ask this question now.
Yeah.
Because I'll probably forget, but I'll probably forget by the time I get to the point where I probably would ask it. Do you prefer this to Panisse's solo work? Or is that like...
Oh, that's a tricky one, actually, because...
Is that Sophie's choice?
Yeah, because they're very different, because the Scud Mountain Boys is very much the alt country. I mean, it's a different kind of alt country. It's kind of... They're country, but they're not Billy Ray Cyrus country.
Mm-hmm.
They're Jayhawks country. And they're Americana, but they're softer than the likes of, say, Wilco or Uncle Teplo or Sun Vault. They're not that kind of Americana. But then Panisse Brothers, the later stuff, is so much more poppy. And that brings in Joe Panisse's influences, like the Smiths. Joe Panisse loves the Smiths.
Okay.
In fact, he wrote a piece of fiction. You know the 33 and a third series of books?
Unfortunately not, no.
Oh, okay. So it's a series of books. which someone writes about one album.
Okay.
The book form of your podcast, okay. Perhaps. It's been around for a long time.
Well, let's check that out.
And Joe Panisse wrote a 33 and a third book on Meat Is Murder, the okay. Smiths album. Except, strangely, unlike all the rest of the books in the 33 and a third series, it's not actually about the album. It's a piece of fiction, fan fiction, if you like, about someone who gets into the Smiths and that album. And it's a really lovely story, oh, okay. actually. I think it was his first work of fiction. And it's brilliant. I thoroughly recommend it if you like that Smiths album at all anyway.
Okay.
I don't know if you're a fan of the Smiths.
I'm a fan of perhaps three quarters of the Smiths at the moment, so...
Like the rest of us,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think, well, the Smiths are probably one of the better indie trios of the 80s. So I think when you said you wanted to do this album, I'd never heard of Scandinavian Boys before. I've not heard of Joe Panisse either. So this is me going in completely blind. And it's like, again, it's kind of like a genre of music that, again, I'm not... It's not stuff that I'd listen to, but... There are traces of it from perhaps like about 5-6 years ago when I was a lot more into kind of the folk punk scene and stuff, and like the indie record label Extra Mile, and I believe, and the closest album that art, well, the group that this reminded me of was a group called Glossary, which were like an American alternative country band who released an album, I think, in 2011. I think it was 2011, and the names escaped me. It reminds me of a lot of that, but at a slower tempo, so it kind of reminded me of that stuff. But but again, also it feels like an album that quite stuff of the folk, kind of folk punk or the kind of folk country stuff from, well, you've got the folk punk stuff from like British like artists, and then you kind of like country folk punk type stuff, which isn't country but has traces of that. There'll always seem to be about halfway through a kind of slower tempo track where they kind of get more introspective, just to slow down. So like you've had like about six kind of like tracks of GCD repeated over, like about politics. Then you have the slow introspective one, and it's felt like an album full of those.
Just
songs.
The introspective ones.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is kind of the reverse, where it's an album full of introspective songs with only one kind of upbeat one on the whole album.
Yeah, yeah. So it didn't feel completely alien to me, but I did quite like it. It has a very much like a Sunday afternoon feel for me, like something that you can probably put on in the Sunday afternoon after you've had your Sunday dinner and you're just kind of relaxing and trying to forget that the Monday's approaching.
Right.
So like so in the gap between dinner and Songs of Praise or Heartbeat.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I like to listen to it at 2 a.m.
Oh, okay.
Saturday, going through into Sunday morning in a kind of gin-soaked, mournful mood.
Oh, okay. But it's something that I'd probably actually bring up in a future episode that we've pre-recorded with your co-host, Colin, with an album I'm not going to reveal of, but it's slightly different to the sound of this. But it has, again, don't want to spoil what I'm going to say, there's like a certain mood and like a vibe that's generated from the album. And it's pretty good to be able to put as not ambient in the fact that it's ambient music, but I ended up this morning, I ended up doing like some last minute DIY trying to fix a mirror that was slanting off, and I had this in the background. And it's very good music to be able to dip in and out while you've got it in the background as well, because it will help me focus actually.
Yeah.
So it has that kind of like ambient feel to it, which I quite liked actually. So
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's probably not something I listen to that like occasionally, but it is kind of like good for certain like certain moods and stuff. So like if I get angry that the mirror in the hallway is slanted again, I'm not going to like break. I'm not going to listen to music that's going to make me punch it in frustration. So I've gone completely blind into this.
I mean, I wouldn't listen to it to keep me calm, really. I find it a very emotional album, so...
When I was sitting down and, like, when I sat down... Because I would sometimes have it in the background, I'll sometimes have it... probably some of the best times when I'm listening to stuff for the podcast is perhaps when I'm driving to and from work.
Yeah.
It kind of forces you to listen to the music more because you can't really be distracted while you're driving anyway. And... Quite a few things I've got from that as well, as saying it's full of like heartbreak and like heartbreak and love and pretty much like a spectrum of emotion stuff.
Yeah.
And it took about a third or fourth listen to realise that there's also some very dark humour in it.
Very dark.
There's very dark humour. Because at one point, because I remember listening, I was writing down, and because originally I was going to put, has anyone checked to see if Joe Pernice is okay? It's like, on the same level, like you listen to Strange in the Alps by Phoebe Bridgers, he goes, has anyone checked that Phoebe's okay? But then...
He's fine. He's usually to be found on Twitter ranting about politics currently. So. Yeah.
But there's like, there are elements of him like having a really twisted sense of humour that, but the way that the songs are arranged and performed, you don't realise it.
You wouldn't know unless you're listening. You wouldn't realise just how fucked up and bitter.
Yeah.
The topics of most of the songs on the album are
the one that not jumping into the songs specifically, but the example I've given of that is I think it's in Lift Me Up where he goes, "If I die today, don't cry in my grave because I'll be laughing when they drop you down into the grave." Which I noticed that and like it's. It's like the flip verse of Funeral from
But that song, that song's not about death, though. It's a very humorous song. Someone's drunk at a party and they're so drunk that they can't stand up and they're convinced they're about to die. Mm-hmm. They can't see. And basically it's their friends all just taking the piss out of them for being so drunk. It's a very funny, but still, dark humour. It's a great song.
But on the first listen... You wouldn't get the humour.
No, not at all.
No, and again, and it's particularly it's one of the albums that I think if any listeners, regular listeners, do listen to albums as they either before or after. If you only listened to the album once before this episode, I'd recommend listening to it again because it's one of these that rewards repeated listens.
Yeah, the beautiful guitar, the sort of like laid back country feel of it.
Yeah, and then. Second or perhaps third time, you start to realise some of the lyrics are kind of slightly against what the tone of the song is.
Yeah.
And it gives it an extra layer of like, oh, okay, this is a lot more
interesting. It is an album that very much draws you in.
Yeah. But yeah.
The more you listen to the lyrics, I think. And it's right from the start as well, in fact. Right from the first track, In a Ditch, you listen to the lyrics of that and you know the album isn't going to be an easy ride.
Yeah.
No pun intended. But the album, the song is, it's a tragedy of an ex-lover killed in a car accident. But rather than what you might expect, an outpouring of sympathy about this, it's full of callous accusations and reprimands and told you so-ness. And there's such a turnaround of emotions in it. I mean, it's gut-wrenching, really. You know, it's only sort of toward the end of the song you get kind of any remorse at the death. I won't read any of the lyrics out. I mean, go listen to it if you're interested. But, you know, the song crushes me, and that's just the opening song.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, because, again, it's like the first line is they pulled up from a ditch last night. And you're saying it is very it doesn't seem to want to make the narrator sympathetic.
No,
so, like a sympathetic character. And again, I don't think you get that on the first listen. This guy's a bit stuff. And but then like it's one of these instances where I think, oh my god, we're not supposed to, because we're supposed to kind of like. Judge the opinions of the narrator for thinking that, and
are you meant to feel sorry for the person who's dead at the wheel? Are you meant to feel sorry for the narrator? It's an unexpected angle on it.
Yeah.
And then I mean my favorite song on the album is actually Grudgefuck.
Okay.
And that's it's a regretful post-breakup ballad. It's about a loser, a complete loser, and he is trying to do anything he can to get with his ex for just one more night. And you'd think, oh, yeah, post-breakup, heartbreak, but it's bitter. It's so bitter. You could read it as someone in love, unwilling to give someone up, but it's more sinister. It's like he won't leave her alone. Mm-hmm. But like it's an act of revenge. You know, I mean, it's called Grudgefuck, you know, so it's it's not, hey, let's give this another chance. It's, hey, I'm going to get back at you. So, but the ballad itself is the most beautiful whiskey-soaked piano ballad.
Yeah.
You know, so there's this pulling between the lyrics and the melody.
Be interesting to, if you sat someone in a room, not told them the title of the the song, and just played it to them, and then just for once, and then say, and then ask them what they thought about the song, and then say, oh, it's called Grunge Fuck, and these are the lyrics, read it again, and just see if their opinion changes after. Goes, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And see if the opinion changes. Because again, it's that kind of manipulation of expectation of what the song's going to be and what the song's actually about, which gives it an extra layer of interesting, for lack of a better term. So, yeah.
Definitely.
Mm. So, is that your favourite song?
It's between that one and another track on it as well, Glassjaw, which is another heartbreaking tale. This one sort of more centred around domestic abuse, of being beaten, being controlled, being told you're worthless. It's this like sort of self-deprecating, worthless cry that just really grabs me. You know, it just really makes you feel for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful, beautiful song. So, I think it's the guitar that makes all these songs so sad as well. There's something about that country pedal steel guitar that just makes your heart ache, no matter what they're singing, whether it's sad or not.
Yeah. It's
such a yearnful tone.
Yeah. A couple of other songs I'll probably want to quickly jump to, but when you're talking about the sound of the album, there is a Guardian article from 2013 by a guy called Michael Hann, who I think for like about 2 months at the start of 2013, the Guardian ran something called Hidden Treasures, where the...
I think I've read this article, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the Guardian staff members would pick like albums they like, which no one else would probably listen to. Or
I wouldn't have read it at the time, but I think I've read it since. Yeah,
but I think, and they chose this album.
Yeah.
And I haven't actually copied and pasted the thing I wanted to say, but one of the things he did point out was that it got lumped into like country, but it doesn't dip into what you expect country to be. So it's not about your stereotypical yee-haws, upbeat truck driving stuff. It's the minor key version of country.
Oh, country heartbreak.
Yeah, and I think the article kind of like focuses on that bit in terms that it doesn't seem to want to delve into the usual tropes of what you expect country to be. And again, I really wish I copied and pasted this now. there's a section which there's like a line section where he says that the suggestion, I think, that Michael Hann was trying to say was that it kind of is in between. It's an album that's kind of out of time in trends. Whereas I think if it was released about 10 years later, it would have fitted in a lot more with the sound of kind of like folk, like the kind of like...
And the kind of Americana that was being released then. Yeah, yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, whereas in like 10 years ago, no, it kind of didn't have an identity.
I mean, I think they picked up more interest with this album, I've read since, because after the release of Massachusetts, they actually did a repackage of the first two albums, and it was a Scud Mountain Boys, the early year rather than years, but that repackaged the earlier two albums, which, I mean, they're difficult to get hold of in their original format now, but you can pick them up as this repackaged.
Okay.
So is this
kind of like the lost son of the albums, or is it the other two more popular, or...?
No, I think Massachusetts is still deemed to be the classic, you know, their third album. And then they had another album much later. They did a reunion tour in 2012, which, I mean, I didn't know about then. And they had an album in 2013. They never really broke. I think attention waned after Massachusetts, and that's when Joe Panisse went on and did the Panisse Brothers and the much poppier side.
Oh, okay. I just want to dip back to, because again, I think we, as sometimes in these episodes, kind of dip out of the structure and stuff.
I meander everywhere.
I want to briefly mention two songs actually, A Ride and Holy Ghost.
Yeah,
because and I only picked this up about an hour and a half ago when I was just doing some last minute reading through and stuff. In that, firstly, Arise quite seen. It's one of those songs where it seems kind of like oddly specific, and feels like a moment in time where you have to read around what's going on, because but on the gist of it, it sounds just like someone's got a phone call from an ex and driving basically just to pick them up and drop them off home or something from somewhere.
Phone call in the middle of the night, fucked up. Come and help me out.
And again, as you say, there's some kind of callous judgment there and stuff. There's like references to this person who's been picked up not being well. Again, for me, the suggestion perhaps is they've had a night out where they've either got drunk or taken something, and because I think one of the lines is about them being like a skeleton or something. So the suggestion is they don't look well, they're not in a good place. But then the narrator of the song is saying, "Don't really give a crap."
Didn't really, give a fuck,
yeah. We're not switching hands. We didn't even say anything. I'm just dropping you off. But then reading into it, the suggestion being that perhaps the person that needed the lift has no one else to speak to in the moment, and is perhaps could theoretically be someone need help. But then the narrator of the song, Panice doesn't seem to have any qualm in making the narrator of the song feeling like the villain of the story.
It's what I said about this being a collection of tales about fucked up relationships. In almost every song, there is someone who is reaching out to the only person that can help them, and that person actually not helping them at all. It seems to be what happens in almost all of them. I mean, because then there's Liquor Store, which is actually the only one on the album that's sung by Stephen Desaulniers. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his surname. I'm sorry. But so it's sung by him rather than Joe Panisse. And this is the tragic tale of an alcoholic in denial, just looking for an escape from the world. And it's got such a lovely, lilting delivery. And there's repetition of lyrics that go across the two verses, repetition of one or two, three or four, any one of them, which is kind of hypnotic. It's a really, really lovely song. It kind of puts me in mind of American Music Club. Mark Eitzel, the writer of that, they had a song called Gary's Song, which is another, sort of like appeal to a drunken friend. And I think Joe Panisse has the same knack as Mark Eitzel for, the tragic and affecting tales of drunkenness and that self-deprecating kind of nature.
Because if it's... I've not been able to see whether these are autobiographical or not, or whether they're fictional stories.
I don't know.
But there is quite...
I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if they are, because they seem to be quite specific in detail.
Yeah.
But if they are fictional...
But then they could be embellished.
Yeah. Yeah.
For artistic effect. Yeah.
The second song I want to mention as well was Holy Ghost, which follows A Ride, because I'm pretty sure that this is actually the same instance of the previous song, but from the other person.
Oh, really?
Because the first one is... I'm going to quote...
Oh, I'd never thought of them as
the
being...
The first four lines of Holy Ghost are... Strung out on the edge of town, trying to bum a ride, I know you think I'm yellow for the tears I've cried. And then, can I make you love me? Can I turn the tide? Attend the Holy Ghost to have you by my side. Now, with the idea that I've just said with the other one, we're saying that it's the person where they've just called the narrator off a ride. And the idea being is that...
Yeah.
And the idea is that the narrator of that song didn't really want to
do anything. I'd never thought about them two being linked in that way. I tell you what, I do think a link I saw, but not between two songs on this album or even by the same artist. I don't know if you're familiar with the Jenny Lewis song Happy.
No.
It's from her Rabbit Fur Coat album, which was from 2006. And Jenny Lewis was from Rilo Kiley.
Yes, yeah.
Right, so. And this was her solo album with the Watson Twins.
Yeah, she was also in Postal Service as well.
Yes, of course she was, of course. Yes, I know
which
you love
her. Which you can listen to, because it was the last episode. So
fantastic. But the song Happy, I've always thought that's some kind of reply song to Grudge Fuck.
Okay.
I've looked at the lyrics between those two songs, and it seems to me that the character she is singing as in Happy is the one that Joe Panisse is trying to get back with in Grudge Fuck. And he's saying... I would do anything to make it with you just one more time. And she's saying, and in the opening of Happy, she starts off, I'd rather be lonely, I'd rather be free. And then, but she says, but I like watching you undress, and I think we're at our best by the flicker of the light of the TV set. And when he says, I only wish I had another turn. And in her song, she's like, because I can't remember why I hate you, can't remember why I still do, but I'm sure as the moon rolls around you that I could be happy. And it feels like this call and reply thing between the song. And, you know, I mean, they're 10 years apart, but they just work together. You know, play them back to back really works. It's heartbreaking. Yeah.
Slightly on topic, slightly not, but I've always wanted an excuse to mention this on the podcast, so I'm using this as a very loose link. I've got two of my favourite pieces of gig banter from an artist in between songs. I won't say the one. The other one, it's from the same, both from the same artist from the same gig. So it's R.M. Hubbard from...
Oh, yeah.
I believe from the Arabs... Rap or
he did an album with Aidan Moffat.
Yeah, he was playing randomly in the Yardbird in Birmingham years and years ago. A musician called Rob Moir who played a friend's living room like years before.
Oh right.
He was like turned up in like Birmingham, so we went to go and see him, and he was supporting R.M. Hubbard. And I think it was like moved from like the Heron Hounds, and he sat down and says one of my favourite albums of the last year was Cinderella Eyes by Nicola Roberts, and there's a song on there, I can't remember what the name of the song was, but there's a song on there where she talks about an ex-boyfriend and the kind of toxic relationship that was developed from that and the gradual breakdown of the relationship, and basically the behaviour that happened, and the behaviour from both sides, because I think she admits in the song that it wasn't entirely his fault. And I listened to that album and that track especially, and then I thought, you know what? What would the song be like? What would the other side of that relationship be like? So I sat down and thought, I probably could write a song about the other side of this relationship, like a sequel song to it, and reflect about the relationship with quite a high-profile name, but who's also had some quite high-profile struggles in the media. I sat down, started writing, and thought, fuck that, let's write a song about curry. And to this day, that is one of my favourite pieces of gig banter.
Fantastic.
But it was going on for, it was a lot longer, a lot more solemn and stuff, and he started breaking down stuff. And so when everyone talks about songs that relate to each other, I always think of that, but it's the punchline.
I haven't seen him live. And when R.M. Hubbard and Aidan Moffat released the album together, Here Lies the Body, which is a beautiful album, I really wanted to catch them live, and they played Birmingham, but it was on the same night, I think, that I was recording a We Dig Music podcast.
Oh, okay.
And so I didn't go to it.
Yeah. The other one I'll save, because it's quite a serious and quite a very beautiful piece of gig banter that I'll save for when the mood is right and the topic is right. But that's one of my favourite pieces of gig banter. So, I've been wanting an excuse to mention it for since I've started this, so I'm using that excuse. But a sequel song that wasn't actually a sequel song.
But I mean, other connections with Massachusetts, actually, you know, because there's the Jenny Lewis connection that I spotted, you know, my invented connection that was 10 years apart. But I actually think Massachusetts is very much like the Byrds' Sweetheart of the Rodeo album, okay, which was their big country album after all of their jangly pop, and it's when Gram Parsons had joined the band.
Okay.
And I've always loved the Byrds. I listened to them from when I was little. My mum used to play them. But I didn't really know the Sweetheart of the Rodeo album until they released the Legacy edition of it. And like Massachusetts, I got really addicted to that album. Mm-hmm. But I think Grudgefuck on Massachusetts somehow reminds me of the Byrds, You Don't Miss Your Water.
Yeah.
And Liquor Store reminds me of You're Still on My Mind. And Desaunier's vocal delivery on that is almost like a Gram Parsons vocal, I think. Because with the Legacy edition is the only one where you'll get the original vocal takes from Gram Parsons on a couple of the songs, when it had to be released with re-recorded vocals because he's he was still on contract to his previous record company, and they were threatening legal action. And his vocals were just astounding. And I hear a lot of that in that Liquor Store track. And then there's Van Drunk from Massachusetts is similar to Hickory Wind on Sweetheart of the Rodeo, sort of lilting three four time signature. I don't know. I just like I feel there's a very similar mood and tone and style to the albums. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of hope that Joe Panisse would appreciate the comparison.
Yeah. Basically, your headcanon connections.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's okay. I think actually, you mentioned Van Drunk. That is the song I put in the Sunday dinner note, Waiting for Heartbeat.
It's actually possibly the song I like least. The guitar on it is really beautiful, but I don't know. I don't make any connections with the lyrics on that one. I'm not sure I get the references in the lyrics. So I think that's possibly my least favourite on the album.
No.
As I say, musically, it's still beautiful, but it just doesn't soar in the way that some of the other songs do for me.
Okay.
I mean, Lift Me Up, what we mentioned earlier. Actually, if I can mention an observation from David Bruce, who's the one that introduced me to this album, he said that Lift Me Up is possibly, he thinks, the slightest song on the album, but lyrically he thinks it's immense. And he said after the guitar solo and the music drops away and it goes very quiet for a bar, and then the vocal chimes in, "Hey Joe, I need that drink," and then he said there's three most beautiful descending guitar notes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his favorite moment on the whole album.
Okay.
And he's right, it's really beautiful, those three notes. Yeah, it's just the whole album just resonates so much. I mean, when you go to the last track, Knievel, the song, it almost acts like a summary of the previous songs. And he talks about jumping the moon and leaving the ground. And I'm thinking with all the high emotions that have preceded this song, you'd hardly expect the closing track to remain terrestrial. And so he talks about leaving the ground, and with each guitar note he sings, he keeps singing flying, and each time he sings the word flying, you kind of feel him getting further and higher and until he's like kind of soaring above and kind of looking down on the rest of the album, like what he's created, and like sort of gesturing at it and saying, "Well, here is my agony and my solace, you know, please,
I'm buggering off.
please listen, please let your ears and your soul digest my masterpieces." It's how it seems to me as he's flying up above the earth.
That's like Podcast House, where they put a podcast on and then just like pretend it doesn't exist. Like, no, actually saying that, that's when I go onto the official artist Reddit and then just spam episodes of this. I put it on there and then like hide any notifications, replies, and like just pretend it doesn't exist just in case people reply saying this was crap. But yeah, so I feel some sympathy there. But
then as the song, you know, sort of then it comes down again and you feel like he's descending back to earth. And the very final words of the song and the whole album is, "I have a bone in need of breaking." And when I heard that line, I'm just like, yeah. "And I have a heart in need of mending."
Mm-hmm.
And it seems such a lovely, gentle finish to come back down to earth with. So, yeah, he kind of rounded it off really nicely.
Yeah, it's got pretty good imagery, which kind of fits in with the whole of the rest of the album. I'm going to briefly move on to the reception of the album. And there's not that much I found online in terms of reviews on it.
No.
Again, like one of the things that appears on the first page of search results when you search for "Good Mate in Boys, Massachusetts" is this Guardian article saying it's a hidden treasure. It has got a review on All Music, which is then is 4.5, and
that's 4.5 out of
5.
That's so 5. Pretty high.
Yeah, couldn't find it on Pitchfork, but that's probably what, a 7.8 on Pitchfork or something like that. So All Music, I've forgotten the reviewer's name, but what they've written down was the sudden national attention seems not to have spooked the Scuds. The Scuds. And while
And so while Massachusetts feels better crafted than the band's previous two albums, more mature in terms of songwriting, it retains the easygoing kitchen table spirit that marks the band's earlier work. This is music that moves slowly but grows on you quickly. So, in fact, kitchen table spirit. So, Sunday dinner.
Well, the kitchen table thing is how they used to play when they used to get together and just play their instruments around the kitchen table.
Oh, okay.
And in fact, when they toured earlier stuff, they actually put a kitchen table in the middle of the stage and just sat around it, and that's how they played. I'd love to have seen them do that.
Okay. And the only other one I pointed out is that, and I can't believe it's taken me until episode 31 to look at these, but because when I was looking for reviews, it took me to the Amazon reviews, and there's not many. There was like a 5 out of 5 and like someone like saying, oh, it's really great, which, to be fair, when you look at Amazon reviews, it's quite boring. But someone rated it 2 out of 5. And the only reason I want to mention it, because I thought it was very funny. I thought that this would be more of a bluegrass sound. It wasn't what I really wanted, but hey, it was free. 2 out of 5.
It was free. Gosh.
But, that's it. There's no context or anything. So,
You know, I mean, like, so you said the one that comes up most in the search is saying that it's a hidden treasure from The Guardian. But then that's like, you know, David Bruce, who said, this is the greatest album you've never heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's right. It is. It's a lost classic. It's a hidden treasure.
Yeah, there is a lot.
And that's why I wanted to pick it and talk about it for this episode, because I wanted to bring it to more people. I really did. You know, I could have come on here and talked about one of my favourite Teenage Fanclub albums, or one of my favourite My Bloody Valentine albums, or Ultra Vivid Scene, or any of those other ones that you mentioned at the top of this show that are there in my bio as, you know, some of my favourite bands. But this was one I wanted to bring it to, you know, wider attention, really. Mm-hmm. It deserves to be heard.
That I definitely agree with, because it's definitely something that rewards quite a few listens. And again, it said it's not something I probably won't listen to repeatedly, but it's something that I quite enjoy listening to and delving into, particularly when you suddenly start realising what the lyrics are. Have you ever seen them live?
No, I wished I had. Like I said, they did do a reunion tour in 2012, but they weren't on my radar then. And Joe Panisse actually had a project with Norman Blake of Teenage Fanclub, because both Norman Blake is Scottish and Joe Panisse is American, but both of them moved in recent years to Canada for love. And they met while over there and started a project together called The New Mendicants. The Mendicant is a track from a Scud Mountains Boys song, actually. So they had a project singing together, and I never caught them live either. So no, I've never seen Joe Panisse in any of his forms live, and I so would love to.
Okay. So if he's listening.
He did actually. He replied to a tweet of mine about a week ago, because he released an album end of last year called Spread the Feeling, which isn't really available for sale here. He doesn't even have a record label or distribution in the UK. So I ordered it sort of direct from his site from the US, and it cost more in postage than the album itself cost. And he replied to my tweet and said, "Well, I hope it's worth it." And for the record, it totally is.
Oh, okay. So, kind of leads into the next question, other albums in the discography. Now, we've kind of touched upon this in general, but the general question, if people listen to this and then perhaps want to move on to something else that either the Scud Mountain Boys have done, or perhaps what Joe Panisse has done, where would you recommend them to go next?
I mean, Scud Mountain Boys, this is the classic. But do go check out the compilation of the first two albums, Pine Box from 1995 and Dance the Night Away as well. Because they're very much in a similar vein, slightly more lo-fi. But then if you listen to the Joe Panisse stuff, Overcome by Happiness in 98, it's poppy, but it's still very much tinged. It's maudlin tinged. It's still got that kind of... There's something about his vocals that it just always feels sad. It just pulls on your heartstrings. I think my favourite Overcome by Happiness is beautiful, but I think my favourite, actually, the earlier Panisse Brothers stuff was Discover a Lovelier You from 2005. In fact, the album they did after that, though, Live a Little, in 2006, features a later take of Grudgefuck.
Oh, okay.
And so what I can't work out is, because I bought that album at the time, and I can't work out why I didn't pick up on that track. And I may probably didn't mention that it was a cover of his previous band, but I tell you what, it's nowhere near as good as the Scud Mountain Boys version.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, because it was like, it was 2006. It was re-recorded, apparently. Was it 2006? Yeah.
I mean, the Panisse Brothers have got they've got a beautiful song called "Saddest Quo," and yeah, it's just another yearning, sad song. But like I say, the Panisse Brothers is very much poppier. Panisse also recorded in between Scud Mountain Boys, Massachusetts, and their later album. He recorded under the names Chappaquiddick Skyline and Big Tobacco. And I've got to admit, though, I've never actually checked them out myself. So, you know, maybe I ought to go back and listen to other stuff in his catalogue.
Yes, it sounds like another three-word abbreviation it could potentially add. alongside the Jacksonville Tea Party.
I've run out of characters in my Twitter bio. they really need to expand the amount of characters you can put in your bio.
Yeah, but you can probably put there next to Ukrainian volcanic soccer and all that.
Yeah.
I think I'm just like going to come up with an indie band and just call it that, just because. Okay, we're now nearing the end of the podcast, and we're here for the important bit, which is the Playlist Hall of Fame, the song for the playlist. Now, for those listening for the first time, what this is that there's a Spotify playlist, which I asked the guest to pick one song to go onto it, and I've got no say, I can't veto it at all. It's at the mercy of the guest. And Tracy, what song are you going to pick?
It was a toss-up between my two favourites on the album, but I think Glassjaw wins it, because if I wanted anyone to be drawn in by one song, I think that one has it more than Grudgefuck. So yeah, I'd like Glassjaw to go on the playlist.
Glassjaw going onto the playlist.
Yes, please.
And with that, you're at the end of this guest on this episode of this podcast, which I'm not going to say because I've tried to say it several times. No, I'm not exaggerating. I've tried to say the name of this podcast about three or four times as a way to wrap up. But, we're at the end. And so thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you very much. And and for introducing me to the Scud Mountain Boys and this great album.
To some old country heartbreak.
Yeah. And before we go, if people want to find you or your podcasts or whatever, where can they find you?
So we've mentioned the name of it a couple of times, but I'm one third of the podcast known as We Dig Music, along with Colin and Ian. And if you haven't heard of a podcast, we take a letter of the alphabet each month and do two bands that start with that letter, one well-known band and one less well-known band. But the three of us have got quite clashing tastes sometimes. We don't always agree. And we're not very good at staying on topic either. So really, the podcast isn't just a music knowledge. It's just us wittering and rambling on. But also, I'm a very occasional music reviewer as well. And if you want to read anything I've written, I'd love you to read a piece I wrote for the Toppermost website. Mm-hmm. And I wrote an article about my favourite American music club songs, an article I'm quite proud of. So I'd love people to read that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The We Dig Music just recently joined the We Made This Podcast Network as well. So
we did.
Yes, you're part of the family too as well. So, and Colin will be back in not 2 weeks, in two episodes' time with an album that he's picked, and then eventually Ian will show up as well, and I'm going to be picking
on great stuff.
I'm through with this one's issue, but I fully recommend We Dig Music. I've been listening to it now for a couple of years, and it's actually still kind of surreal that I'm actually now interacting with the host of that, because I remember years ago, like particularly over the New Year's when I was doing longer runs, and I used to run a lot longer than run for a lot much more than I used to do now. Yeah. I used to listen to you guys on that, and it's kind of weird now that like I can't get rid of Colin.
No,
I can't get rid. He just seems to.
And that you bump into me at gigs.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. There's probably been gigs we've been to not like in the past that we've known.
There must have been.
Yeah, because I think you said you was at the Orleans like a year and a half ago.
The Ariel's at the Hare and Hounds, 2 years ago,
Yeah, and there's probably loads of others as well. So, again, I recommend Weeding Music. It's very good, very funny. If you want to check an episode, check out the Oasis one, because that is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. Pissed Off Ian is brilliant.
He's Ian at his best, definitely.
Basically.
If you wanted to check out an episode where I'm at my best, I would recommend maybe the PJ Harvey one, where you can really get out the Tracy Bingo cards.
Yes. Or the Nick Cave one where you've managed to develop
Or the most recent one, Nick Cave one, yes.
Yeah, which for the first previously on the Weeding Music one, he picked out the moment where he references the X-Files, and considering the X-Cast is one of the biggest parts of the... one of the biggest parts of the We Made This Network. That's clever marketing.
It wasn't intentional. Unplanned tangent.
Yes. And with that, it's time to say goodbye. And thank you ever so much for taking the time to pop down.
Thanks so much,
HQ,
Matt.
We get HQ to talk about some amazing boys.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Pick a Disc, and I've been your host, Matthew Lavin. Our theme music is Pump by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Pick a Disc is hosted by the We Made This Podcast Network, and you can find them on www.spreaker.com/user/WeMadeThis. You can find the Pick a Disc show site on www.spreaker.com/show/Pick a Disc. You can find us on all the usual social media type places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter under Pick a Disc. You can also email us on pickadisc@gmail.com. Until next time, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
Previously on the We Made This Network. The One Season Show.
And the fact that, much like any TV show, TV episodes are being written by different people. Probably the same core team, but they're being alternated, so whatever tone, if the writers aren't on the same page, or if they think they're on the same page but they're not really, you're going to get episodes that are going to be driving more into the, Jack character arc, growing as a person, storylines versus kitchen shenanigans,
Right.
Episode.
Make It So. Star Trek Picard podcast.
This interestingly brought up a conversation we've had in our Facebook group about canon versus non-canon, and which is always a good topic, isn't it? But the whole idea of that, as soon as I read The Last Best Hope, in my head this is canon, and we were discussing how nothing is ever canon until it's actually on screen, which is the classic edict for particularly Star Trek, which is understandable.
Makes me canon, of course. So,
exactly. You are now canon. And if you're canon, so for me, so should The Last Best Hope.
Fast, Furious, and a Bottle of Corona.
Well, yeah, you say about diversity, and I wanted to look at casting ideas and potentially who was up for the roles. So I had a little look online, and apparently it could have been so different, almost whitewashed. It could have been Mark Wahlberg, Christian Bale, and Eminem.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly. Wow. And then I dug a little deeper, guys. Wait for it. We know Saved by the Bell, right? That TV show, yeah? Saved by the Bell?
Yeah.
So Rob Cohen, bless his heart, he wanted AC Slater. Do you remember him, Mario Lopez?
Oh my gosh.
So
you are kidding.
I'm assuming he would have been Dom. And then I forget his name. Mark Paul Glacier, whatever it is. Zach Morris, essentially. He was up for it as Brian up and Zoom. And then they wanted Dustin the Legend Diamond Screech. And I assume he would have been Jesse. So I'm like, where could this film have gone?
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.